this is a movie built for Thanksgiving weekend. Like, if you ever wanted to make a movie about a dysfunctional family and then be able to take your own dysfunctional family to see it, it's this movie. It's a perfect family comedy.
So that was Jamie Lee Curtis talking about the movie Knives Out, which we're going to talk about in the latest episode of Sitting Around Talking Movies. And happy Thanksgiving to everybody. I'm Neil Rosen, joined as always by Bill Bregoli.
By two other turkeys.
That's right.
And Bill McCuddy. How are we Gobble. Doing?
Good.
And let's start talking about Knives Out. We all kind of like this one, I think. Bill McCuddy in particular really liked it.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't think... It's a whodunit starring Daniel Craig and everyone else in Hollywood in a big old house that I guess was in...
Massachusetts,
yeah. It's a real house and they shot it for... Rian Johnson was the writer-director. And, you know, I won't say I had low expectations, but I just thought, gee, this is a genre that we've seen before, and it was very, very popular, like the 60s and 70s. And
yeah, the Miss Marple, everybody, yeah. Nobody leaves the room. The killer is right here.
And what's Daniel Craig's name? He's got a southern
Benoit
draw.
Benoit something.
Benoit, yeah. And they're talking about, actually, there was a party
Benoit.
Here.
Benoit.
There was a party here in New York this past weekend that a bunch of us went to that, you know, Daniel Craig was talking about liking this character. And so this is, I'm not saying it's going to be the next James Bond, but it could be something he'd do one or two more of. I found it very, very entertaining. It's about, you know, Christopher Plummer. It just like these tropes in the first 5 minutes of the film, rich guy gets killed. Everyone's a suspect. They were all there for his birthday. And Jamie Lee Curtis is in this thing who, by the way, I learned was kind of the mother hen on the set and cooked.
They were in the kitchen.
They were in this big kitchen and she was like cooking all the time for everybody and was turning her character on and off.
Christopher Plummer, who,
as I mentioned, was killed.
Spoiler, right? As you said, so that's a pretty big name, and you've got additionally, you got Chris Evans, who I was happy to see was playing a different character and getting out of that Boy Scout Captain America kind of image, and you've got Don Johnson, and you've got Tony Collette, and you've got Michael Shannon,
and you've got Ana de Armas, who will be in the next James Bond movie.
I noticed that. That's really funny because she's this maid, kind of
really
mousy
really most,
and not that gorgeous, but
she's very pretty.
But
if you
she's
going to
be the Bond. She's going to be one of the Bond girls in the next film.
Well, if you look at her,
and I do look at her
outside of this movie. If you just like images of Ana de Armas. I mean, they made her very plain and didn't. She's the housekeeper. I mean, the caretaker for the Christopher
Mousy,
Plummer character.
Like a mouse.
So they dressed her down.
What they say in Funny People, like a mouse, you want to put your dick in.
Yes, they did say that in Funny People. I love that.
And her character's from, depending on what scene you in, a different country.
Right.
But
she's from Brazil. She's from Ecuador.
But no, if you see her, I could easily see her as a Bond girl. Take a look at her out of the plain Jane. Makeup of Knives Out.
Well,
but I like Knives Out. You know, it's a whodunit that I thought I figured out 2 minutes into it. And as I said
what
on the
surprise.
By the way, the television
you
show.
You weren't right.
Talking Pictures with Neil Rosen with this week, which is on CUNY TV this Friday, which is the day after Thanksgiving, actually.
30th.
And then the following Friday on PBS All Arts, where we'll be talking about such movies as Marriage Story and The Two Popes and A Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood and Knives Out, which we're talking about now, and The Report and Dark Waters, as well as a whole bunch of whistleblower films. There's been many over the ages.
And what brought this up? What's that shameless plug
I'm plugging.
I can't remember what
so
you
anyway,
were talking
so
about.
So anyway, so Knives Out. Yeah, I usually figure these things out all the time because we all see so many movies. And... yeah, this completely surprised
Neil
me.
Neil Rosen stymied. What are the odds?
But I was very surprised. I was like, wow, I didn't see this coming. And as Bill mentions on the television show, Bill McCuddy, it all kind of makes sense. You can go back and look at it and go, yeah, it's not like they're these like, yeah, that's ridiculous. You know, they didn't just tackle
Well, those movies often had like a red herring that came in out of nowhere or a scene that you weren't really shown. But isn't it true that the real son was? Well, no, that wasn't true. But this thing, when Daniel Craig lays it all out at the very end, and it's not simple. It's kind of complicated.
Pay attention to this movie.
But all the complications are completely plausible, and there's no hidden, like, you didn't know this person was this person. Everybody's who they say they are, and I just found it very, very clever.
It's also funny,
yeah.
Which nobody's really mentioning here. And I mean, it's rather, not like one of these, you know, what was his first name?
Hercule Poirot
in one of these Agatha Christie things.
Is it like True Detective or, I mean, Chief Detective.
Totally no,
I'm sorry,
the
Chief
that.
Detective or any of those
obvious
comedies. This is just...
Right, so there's no laughs in Murder on the Orient Express, really. I mean, maybe one or two. This is not played for laughs like the Chief Detective or there was another one of those... Neil Simon-y things, you know, I can't remember the name, but yeah, it's not a flat out comedy and it's not a flat out drama, but it works as a whodunit where you want to know and the humor
comes out of an extremely dysfunctional family,
right? Yes,
and it's very current in that Toni Collette's character
Murder by Death is what I was thinking. There's a
swipe at Trump. They don't say his name, but there's like
mentioning that somebody's mother might get deported.
Right. Yeah.
Well, yeah, no, I mean, all the characters...
a swipe at Gwyneth Paltrow, sort of, too.
How so?
Well, Toni Collette's character has a company that's sort of like a takeoff on Goof.
Yeah,
that's funny.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you know, there's also, I don't know, the actress. She steals, like, every scene. She has, like, 10 words of dialogue. There's an old lady who barely speaks who's, like, just looking out the window and watching everything. She looks like a little like, it's not Maggie Smith, but it looks a little like Maggie.
She just sits there.
She just like once in a while has like one line or one word, and she's kind of funny. So yeah, I mean, it's not broad comedy and it's not straight drama, but whatever it is, it works.
And as Jamie Lee Curtis said, it's a perfect family outing movie.
As long as your family swears.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, it is.
There's a lot of swearing for a PG-13 movie. There's a lot of swearing in this movie.
And you had mentioned to me, Bill McCuddy, that somewhere along the line you talked to Daniel Craig, and he wants to do comedy. You were telling me at one particular, like he's
yeah. This
he's
wasn't
happy
the
doing
party
that.
This past weekend. It was something for a movie a couple of months ago.
He did a Steven Soderbergh thing.
He did Logan Lucky.
Yeah,
and he was really funny in that. Remember as the con.
Yeah.
But I
didn't know which, according to him, through you, is that he wants to do comedies. You know, that's what he wants. You know, he likes doing that. But you don't think of him as doing comedies.
Never.
You know? And, you know, he was he's kind of funny in this, you know.
Well, he knows he's doing a character and he's camps it up a little bit.
He's playing the Southern thing as we talked about. And I also read that, but he just said this after the last one, he said he's done with James Bond. He's not playing that character after this one anymore. But this could be a ploy to get more money. I don't know. But
no, he's done.
Is he really done?
Yeah, he's done.
But didn't he
done.
Say that after the last one?
Yeah, but I know. Yeah, but I, he's, his wife is married.
His wife is
Rachel.
Rachel Weisz.
Rachel Weisz.
I know through her company that this is the last thing he's done.
Why? If they're going to pay him $100 million or whatever the hell they're going to pay him to be James
Bond. How much do you need?
Yeah, like why would you? Why would you not just take four or five months out of your life and play the character? You know,
quashed any of the publicity that's happening for the search for the next person.
They did that in the last movie.
No, but they're talking about him being too old for it.
Well, Barbara Broccoli, who's, you know, Albert R. Broccoli or Cubby Broccoli's daughter, who now runs the Bond franchise, has said there was talk for a while that they were going to have a female James Bond. And although I do understand that in this new movie that's coming out, in the beginning of the movie, there is a female 007 for a while, but then I guess Daniel Craig takes the numbers back and becomes James Bond. But Barbara Broccoli has said that there will never be a female James Bond to like front the movie, where that'll be like, you know.
Yeah, I think that's the right decision.
Yeah, I mean, you know, but you know, I've also heard talk about, you know, being an African American James Bond, or not even African, black James Bond, like from Britain. What's the
Idris
British?
Elba?
What?
Idris Elba.
Idris Elba. Yeah, that'd be all right. You know what I mean? Or I don't know. You know, are they going to fuck with the formula?
That came
or
and went.
Gonna...
He said he was very flattered. No one had really actually asked him. I think what they do, which isn't, I won't call it racist, but it is sort of watching their back, is they float these ideas so that the back push is, no, we want regular James Bond. And then they're off the hook.
Well, you know,
you see what I'm saying? Like, if they put a story out there,
and I don't remember if he said this to me or if I just saw this on an interview, but talking about 007, he said, I thought you were supposed to be the next you know, to play the part next. And he goes, they never really ask you. You know, he goes, they kind of, you hear through your agent that there's talk about it, but they don't really come out and ask you, or they didn't come out and ask him anyway. But I think you're right, McCuddy. I think that, yeah, they get good public relations by saying, you know, oh, we're considering having...
And then you get Idris Elba going, yeah, that's would be lovely to be asked, but I haven't been asked.
Yeah, right.
And then you get a lot of people that go, well, we kind of like our James Bonds, like British and white
guys. And it's going to be Eddie Redmayne or something like that, you know. I don't think it'll be Eddie Redmayne.
I don't think we're ready for a red-haired James Bond.
But nobody thought they'd be ready for Daniel Craig, actually, if you think about it. He was not the traditional. I mean, if you look at Connery.
The first headlines were James Blonde, remember? It was like a big controversy.
You look at Lazenby and then you look at Moore. They all have that same, you know, look, so to speak. You know, even.
And he had a hazing. I mean, they said he couldn't drive a stick shift. They said he couldn't fire a gun.
Ooh,
there were
Craig?
All these. Yeah, he had a real hard time of it at first.
Hmm. Yeah.
In Knives Out, speaking of Daniel Craig, when he's doing his Southern accent, and Chris Evans' character says to him at one point, what is this, CSI KFC?
Yeah.
It's a great line.
I also think by design that... he loses that Southern accent every now and then.
Yeah.
Like he's in a B-plus movie and he knows it. And it's like, he's not supposed to be absolutely spot on. So there's a lot to like about this film.
All right. So moving on, The Two Popes, which will probably get a bunch of Academy Award nominations, is a Netflix film that will be in theaters this weekend. And a few weeks later, we'll be on Netflix, sort of like Marriage Story, which was in theaters now on December 6th. We talked about it last week. We'll also be on Netflix.
We saw this movie a long time ago. We saw it out at the Hamptons
Film
Festival.
No, you did. I did not.
You weren't there. And Jonathan
Price. I saw
Price.
It last week, and they gave us pizza.
I spoke to Jonathan Price last week, though, at a reception. But I saw it a few weeks ago, and here's what it's about. Anthony Hopkins and Jonathan Pryce star. Anthony Hopkins is Pope Benedict, and Jonathan Pryce is right before he becomes Pope Francis, and
he's Cardinal Bergoglio.
Okay, and,
a distant cousin.
Right? From really
Argentina? No,
wow.
Not at all.
from Argentina.
I bought it for a second.
And they sit around and they talk for a little over 2 hours and. Pope Benedict.
It's not my dinner with Andre. Whenever
it's
I
funny.
Tell people it's great and it's two plus hours of two old guys sitting around talking, they're like, is it my dinner with Andre? I'm like, no, it's not quite that static.
Well, as opposed to this podcast, which is three old guys sitting around talking about movies. No, but you know, it...
We're three poops.
It's two guys. It's funny, which surprised me. And it's about Benedict. There hasn't been a resignation in the Catholic Church in 850 years prior to this.
600.
Okay, well, you're the Catholic guy here. So
well, that's what I read.
He was rounding up.
Yeah.
Okay, and this is, you know, and Cardinal Bergoglio says...
He wants to quit.
Says, before he's even summoned...
I don't like it.
before he's even summoned to the Vatican... He wants to quit being the cardinal in Argentina. He just wants to go to a little parish.
He also recently lost an election for Pope to Benedict.
Yeah, he's like done with the whole thing. I want to get a little church somewhere.
And if you ever wondered how they pick a pope, this is an interesting. There,
it is
bingo balls.
Yeah,
it's an interesting thing. Somebody sewing something and then smoke.
It's a lotto balls. Yeah. Well,
that sounds like it's going to be boring. That sounds like the inside baseball of how they pick a pope with little balls and smoke and everything. Sounds like it's going to be a snooze.
Well, you knew about this white smoke and the black smoke.
Yeah, sure.
What I didn't realize, and I guess they didn't do this 1,000 years ago, is that they got these electronic machines and they press the button for the white smoke and the white smoke, and they press the button for the black smoke, and it's this like high tech like smoke machine.
Cool.
Which I guess in the old days, how'd you do white smoke and how do you create old? You know, this has been going on for a couple of 1,000 years. How'd you create? What?
It depends on what
was
you burn.
Was it steam? No, it was probably different wood that they
burned.
They knew
wood,
how to burn one thing.
Well, anyway.
Coal.
Yeah. But it's interesting. You know, I liked it. You know, Price, I asked Jonathan Price, I said, you know, I'd like to know if, you know, because the movie says that the Pope that the way it's presented in the movie is that Pope Benedict steps down because he's lost the calling, and he also feels that the church has needs to be moved into the 21st century from an ideological standpoint. And many of these things that are broached that to move it into the 21st century because they're losing a lot of, what's the word?
Catholics.
But they're losing a lot of followers, you know? People are leaving the church.
Because they're fucking little boys.
Right. Well,
and they don't really deal with that head on.
No, they don't. So I asked Jonathan Pryce, I said, according to the movie, he's leaving because he wants to move the church in a different direction. He's not the guy to do it. And he's lost the calling. I go, the way I remember, and I go, I don't know, but I remember when I heard the story that there was a lot of people on the news saying, I bet you he was being forced to step down. So Jonathan Pryce said, well, I think he was forced to step down, and he wanted to step down because the church was moving into a different direction, and he wasn't the guy to do it. But to your point, Bill McCuddy, I don't know. I mean, do you think that he was forced to step down, and it's not in the movie, because of the sexual abuse allegations?
Well, there's a couple of passing
Because that's not really addressed.
There are a couple of passing lines to it, but there's no real, like, this is a problem, this is why I'm leaving. So the movie certainly doesn't answer it. Whether or not that was the real reason, as Price told you.
Price didn't say that was the real reason.
Well, he said
that it was a combination of both, but nothing to do with that, that it was just because they wanted to move the church into a different direction. He didn't mention that the pedophilia.
Well, you can't say moving into a different direction and not have it.
Well, no. Apparently, I hear now that
related to what's been going on in
Benedict,
the church.
That Pope Francis is going to recognize, which is great, which the church would never have recognized, gay marriage. I hear that's and he's going to want to absolve women of who've gotten abortions and things like that. Like But what do I know?
Divorced people can actually accept communion. There are some scenes about that.
Was it divorce or was it abortion?
Well, recently I heard about divorce, and that's only because I'm Catholic and I'm divorced. But so I pay attention.
So he's not absolving people for abortions.
I don't know about abortions.
But to be clear to people listening to this, a lot of what we're discussing now is not in the movie. Right. That's what we're telling you. Yeah. It's still an extremely entertaining, well-done film of two guys. Some fascinating backstory on Price's character about why he's reluctant to become a pope. And that's well told. And I think Jonathan Pryce is maybe the best thing he's ever done. And he's been in a lot of good
really
movies,
good. Yeah.
Including a Bond film, if we want to tag back to that. But I think everyone talks about Anthony Hopkins getting a nomination here. I think the more deserving is Jonathan Pryce.
And the screenplay. And Andrew McCartan did the screenplay. He's really good at that.
Yeah. Well, I think that he will get in a... well, yes, I'm reading this on CNN now. I pulled this up. Pope Francis extends power to forgive abortion. Pope Francis has extended indefinitely the power of Catholic priests to... Yeah, okay, so he's talked about possibly doing that. But again, to your point, McCuddy, this is not... None of this is addressed in the movie.
No.
And do you find that a fault of the movie, or do you find
no,
that...
No, I still enjoyed the movie.
I did too.
Didn't want to get into that.
That's not what the movie's about. The movie's about these two guys who try to...
Well, they get to know each other. Yeah, they become friends.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, they watch...
There's a great
scene... Soccer
they watch world soccer together.
They have pizza.
There's a great scene in the trailer. It's in the trailer.
When, who drinks Fanta?
When Pope Francis, well, Cardinal Bergoglio says at this particular point to Pope Benedict, do you know the Beatles? This is in the trailer, and it's great. And he goes, oh, yes, I know the Beatles. He goes, Eleanor Rigby. And he goes, who is she? What are you talking about, Eleanor Rigby? And he goes, no, the Beatles. It's like an Abbott and Costello, who's on first routine? I don't know her. No, it's the Beatles. I know the Beatles. Who is Eleanor Rigby? Like, and it's like, no, what's on second? Who's on second?
Right.
No, who's on first? I don't know. He's on it's like an Abbott and Costello routine. It's very, very funny. And there's a lot of little moments like that, you know? Meanwhile, I have to give credit to the set designers. They built the soundstage in Cinecittà Studios, where all the 007 movies,
Fellini movies
have been done. Fellini
well,
stuff.
In Rome, yeah.
And they recreated...
When in Rome.
They recreated the Sistine Chapel on a huge soundstage. And Price told me that, yes, they recreated the Sistine Chapel, but not the ceiling. The ceiling was CGI'd. So just so you know.
Yeah, that makes sense. Why would you not do the real thing there?
Can you imagine what a bunch of union painters would cost you?
Yeah, that's ridiculous. Of course you'd show the real Sistine Chapel. I don't know why they didn't shoot in the Sistine Chapel.
Because you can't.
I mean, you can't.
I mean, what are you going to do?
It's expensive.
close down the Sistine Chapel for like up 2 months and bring a movie crew in
two months. That was like one scene.
You could do it at night.
Well, I don't know. I don't think that. Do you think that the Catholic Church would grant permission to film? If you think about it,
I think the Catholic Church can be very happy with this movie for the reasons that we've been talking about earlier, which is it doesn't deep dive into some of the things that are embarrassing to them.
Yeah, they'll be
well,
fine.
If you think about it, I'm trying to think if there are any churches where they film movies inside of. I mean, before it burnt. Not burnt down, it's still standing, but I don't remember any scenes in Notre Dame. I don't remember for movies. I don't remember any scenes in what's the big church in
no, come on, there have been plenty of movies shot.
Been some usually
the one in London, Westminster Abbey.
Yeah, well, yeah, there have been some.
But what's the Tom Hanks movie with where he's trying to, it's the mystery that where he's trying to find.
Oh, the dragons and the yeah, the, well, the what was the first
the original
one called?
One.
Angels
the
and Demons?
Something
or,
code, yeah. The
Da Vinci Code.
Da Vinci Code. Code.
Yeah, I guess that was filmed in a church somewhere.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah, they can do it.
Come on.
Yeah, I don't know.
They need money, too. Just put a couple $1,000 in the collection box as it comes down the aisle.
The church has a lot of money. I don't think it's a money thing. Like, oh, great, we'll make money on like a few dollars. I mean, the church has...
Some local places aren't doing that.
Not the Vatican.
No, not the Vatican. I'm sure it's fine.
Well, anyway, they read... I give credit to the set designers, too.
Worth seeing. Want to just mention as a final note that... And Netflix won't be... Well, actually, Netflix will like that I'm saying this, I think. You don't need to see this on a big screen. This is a perfect movie for Netflix.
Yeah,
I have news.
It's two guys sitting around. Uh-oh.
No, it's great news.
This just in.
I read it yesterday. It's official. The Paris Theater is now officially open. It's not just the Marriage Story thing. They signed
a
deal.
Yeah, I know. We've been talking about this a lot. But again, our apologies to people outside of New York. We are just concerned about the last of the movie houses that are going to be standing 10 years from now. And the Paris was a great independent one next to the Plaza Hotel. And yes, Netflix has rented it during awards season, but I'm not sure how long that agreement.
No. I read a press release yesterday that they signed. They signed the lease. And they
with the
are
the owner of the building.
And also, I know a guy that owns. I know the guy that owns Bowtie Cinemas. This is not through the business. I know him, friend of the family kind of thing. And he said, "Yeah, they're gonna." He actually is gonna. The Bowtie Cinema guy is gonna run the programming to some extent at the Paris Theater when Netflix doesn't have a movie. So in other words, if Netflix...
When would Netflix ever not have a movie?
No, but they wouldn't necessarily... Think about it. They wouldn't necessarily want to put...
A theatrical movie.
A movie into theaters like that. The Jennifer Aniston, Adam Sandler. We're going to talk about biggest turkeys of the year in a minute in honor of the Thanksgiving holiday. Man, was that a piece of shit. That Jennifer Aniston, Adam Sandler mystery crap.
Yeah.
And who was the guy who played the villain in that? It was just terrible. What a terrible fucking movie that
wasn't
was.
Lin-Manuel else was in that?
No.
Somebody famous was also in it.
But anyway, the Paris Theater is open for business and they signed the lease, and I think it's a brilliant move on their part since everybody blames Netflix for closing movie theaters. Let's just watch it on Netflix. So this beloved theater that's in Manhattan that people were bemoaning, including we lobbied to sign a petition here on this podcast. It's going to be open, and when it's and Netflix is going to use it not only for their movies but for events, and you know they have these special screenings. And
well,
stuff.
That's awesome. I mean,
but
unless they want to
but,
prove
but there'll
that
be
nobody,
regular movies. I mean,
unless they want to prove nobody goes to movie houses anymore and are able to say we play movies there and nobody comes.
They signed the lease, and there will be movies playing there. You know, before they announced that they closed it, this is about maybe 8 or 9 months ago. I walked by, and it was the middle of the afternoon, and I saw like. Generally older people, you know, lined up like the old days to buy a ticket to Pavarotti or whatever was playing there. And I'm like, yeah, this is like old school New York. This is great. And so I'm just glad that that still exists and it's not going away. And there's so few of
maybe
that.
Maybe in your town.
Well, I don't know.
The savior known as Netflix will come and buy your local movie
the
theater.
Local
well, they're also, I think, doing it. I don't know if they were going to close it, but the not the Grauman's, not the Chinese theater in Los Angeles.
You are?
The Pantheon? Pantages. I think.
But that's been closed for a while. I mean, that's been showing.
I think
Netflix
is going to be the savior on that one, too.
That's been showing stage productions because it's like Radio City Music Hall. It has a proscenium stage.
Well, the one that I wish they saved, which all the premieres took place out of New York.
Are you sure you're not talking about the New Art?
No, well, okay. The one that I wish they saved was the Ziegfeld Theater, which is now a catering hall.
Yeah.
And that was where all...
They leveled the floor. It's not
did they really? Anymore, yeah. No, that's just well, that that's was what... it was just an opulent, beautiful theater, single screen theater, and you know, you would just like, oh, I want to see this at
this digression is brought to you by LaCroix.
So the biggest turkeys of the year. Well, a lot of those things were on Netflix, believe it or not. Like we said, that Adam Sandler thing, which nobody could even remember.
We give and
the,
we take away to
that's
Netflix.
Right.
Adam Sandler and Jennifer Aniston. We can't even remember the name of the movie, but it was just terrible.
It had murder and mystery in the title, didn't it?
Yeah.
I'll look it up. I'll look it up as usual. I'll look it up.
Just Google five worst Netflix movies of the year and see what comes up. Well, just as a interesting kind of sidebar.
Well, the name of the movie. Notice how I'm talking into the mic more. I'm more conscious of that.
What I'm gonna do.
But mostly the people at home noticed that.
It was called Murder Mystery. You're right, Bill. It had murder and mystery in the title.
How sad is it that I had the title and
very,
didn't even
very,
know it?
Very, very smart on your end, you know.
Murder Mystery. Well, they thought really hard when they were
you can take
out
any genre to Netflix and they'll as a name and they'll do it. I have a great movie called Horror. Oh, we love that.
Here's $20 million.
All right, worst Netflix
I have a new
movies.
Movie called Rom-Com.
I never even
we're
heard
in.
Of this shit. Okay, here are 32 worst Netflix original movies ranked in descending order. The Ridiculous Six. I don't know what that is.
Oh, that was a takeoff on Hateful Eight that Adam Sandler produced with all of his buddies in a Western.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Remember that?
He's nothing but gold for them.
The True Memoirs of an International Assassin. Father of the Year. The Do-Over. Game Over, Man. The Kissing Booth. The Open House. How It Ends. I don't know, man. You know, here's exactly what you asked for, Bill. The five worst Netflix original movies of 2019. Okay, so
drum roll.
All right, The Last Laugh.
Give a credit. Give a shout out to the
with Chevy
website.
Chase and Andy McDowell.
Yeah.
And Richard Dreyfuss. I never heard of that one.
Where are you reading this on Collider?
I'm reading this on Huffington Post.
Okay.
The Silence.
Well, that's supposed to be a bad ripoff of the Quiet
like
One.
A Quiet Place?
Yeah, Quiet Place.
Sextuplets? Polar?
Oh, Polar, I saw that.
Did you, that's you Mad, like that?
Mads Mikkelsen.
Mads Mikkelsen.
I love Mads. We love Mads Mikkelsen. Yeah, and Mads Vanessa Mikkelsen. Hudgens.
Mads.
And
sorry, buddy.
Yeah.
Yeah, so
Huffington Post says you blow.
Well,
Polar,
there were two Mads Mikkelsen movies. One was pretty good with him in the Arctic, where he's in the Arctic, and then there was Polar, where he's a hitman, and that one wasn't.
That's one too many, isn't it, Bill?
Yeah.
Well, here's some movies that weren't necessarily turkeys. I think
Murder Mystery wasn't number one?
Not on there. I don't know. Yeah. Well, I mean, Gemini Man, which none of us saw with Will Smith, just tanked at the box office. You
know? And I heard that that wasn't that horrible. I never saw it. I heard it was bad, but I heard it wasn't that.
He's fighting his own clone.
He's fighting himself, which in Scientology is pretty commonplace.
Well, is Will Smith into Scientology?
He's danced with it, yeah.
Interesting. And then, which you loved, which was Booksmart, and it was a critical darling, that didn't really make any money at all.
You can't call that a turkey because it didn't make enough money.
No, I'm just looking at box office flops. Yeah. It said Booksmart.
I think it didn't meet expectations. I will remind everyone, embarrassingly, that I said that was going $100 million easy, and I was so wrong.
Can you believe
so wrong
that they're talking about? And if you look at Gold Derby, which Bill McCuddy writes for, if you look at the odds on all the categories, that Jennifer Lopez, J-Lo, is the number two. They're talking about J-Lo for getting an Oscar nomination.
I've been saying that since it happened.
For Hustlers.
Well, you know that she would, even if she had to pay for it herself.
A publicist came up to me the other day and she goes, J-Lo for, I don't know, J-Lo for Hustlers? Seriously?
You know that J-Lo and A-Rod would pay for it out of their own pockets just to get the possibility. Even a nomination is a win.
Do you think, not that the Academy, it has to be worthy, because I could tell you over the years a bunch of really unworthy winners and nominees, but you saw the movie, right, Bill?
Yeah.
Do you really think that that is an Academy-worthy nominated performance of Jennifer Lopez
not
in that
so much
movie?
Sure, but there are some other people that could.
In that movie?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that movie
Constance
is way
Wu was
remember
actually
when
quite
it
good.
Came
Constance
out?
Constance Wu was, I don't think it's an Oscar-nominated performance, but I think she was better than J-Lo. The only thing that I was impressed with J-Lo, I watched this with my wife, who was going, look at those pole dancing moves. She's like, for however old she is, that's she's
right.
in pretty
well,
good
she
shape.
Was she famously, A-Rod put a pole in their, I guess, bedroom for her to work out on. You didn't read about that? We had it in the Post.
No, I believe I missed that one.
Okay, well, it's true.
Listen, I didn't like that movie. I thought it was
this
dopey.
Movie may end up in my top ten because
come on. It's
as
such
I
a
said,
dopey movie.
As I said when it came out, it was like a female
Scorsese
movie.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
It had a big tracking shot in the beginning.
It did have all the. I don't mean just for that.
I know.
I think it's a better version of Showgirls, and a lousy version of. I don't know.
What's your favorite stripper movie?
What
Striptease with Demi
Moore?
No,
no, that's terrible. I wasn't even going to name a stripper movie. I was going to name the
like a con
the,
movie.
The Sinatra did it, and then they remade it with George Clooney.
Ocean's 8.
Yeah, it's like a
crazy. Ocean's
it's
11. Like
a, it's not as good as Ocean's 8, and not as bad as Showgirls. You know what I mean?
I think it's much better than you're giving it credit for.
I don't know.
I was very surprised.
It
was directed by a woman, I believe.
Yeah.
Well, that's a good thing, but it doesn't make the movie. I mean, I didn't think the movie's awful, but I mean, I don't think it's good. I mean, I was really got tired by the last act, by the last half an hour.
I didn't
it's
find like, it cliched. I thought
I saw what the crime that they were doing was, and they kept doing it over and over again for like 45 minutes to unsuspecting Wall Streeters. You know, I mean, the only scene I thought that had any kind of really emotional weight was they fleeced one guy and he's like, listen, I just got divorced and I lost my job and I can't pay my mortgage and you just took all my money and why are you doing this and can I have my money back? And Jennifer Lopez is like, Constance Wu wanted to like the guy and like, you know, was thinking of doing it. And Jennifer Lopez, no, you can't get too attached to these people, you know? So I thought that was kind of like had some emotional weight to it. But other than that, it was just kind of dopey, you know? And
not a turkey of the year, please. No. I know that I've said this before,
no,
and I know
I
that most
don't.
People listening to this podcast don't listen to Neil, but don't listen to him this time.
Right. Well, no, I brought this up in the sense of Jennifer Lopez getting an Oscar. They're talking about on your website, the Tom O'Neill Gold Derby thing.
I'm telling you, it's being
still within the range of possibilities.
Yeah, and if it's even possible. She's going
definitely
to make
a Golden
rounds.
Globe.
She's a trooper. Oh, it's a total Golden Globe. It's
an
easy.
Oh, they're a bunch
Globe.
Of whores. I mean, the Golden Globes will give it to. They gave it to like who's the star of the year? That was the most famous one.
Pia Zadora was
Zadora,
purchased
thank
by her
you.
Husband.
You know, I just heard a few weeks ago that one of the movies
Madonna won for Evita. In the Golden Globe.
One of the movies that is being pushed, and I honestly don't remember which one. It might have been Knives Out. Actually, gave the Golden Globes members personalized director chairs. You know,
well, that's nothing.
Chair. Yeah, that's the kind of extent. All right, we got
the Golden Globes is such a secretive organization. I remember it was either 60 Minutes or 2020 on ABC. Do they still is 2020 still on the air? Or is
yeah,
it, yeah. Okay. Well, they showed up at the door of the Golden Globes to interview some people, Mike Wallace style. You know, because they couldn't get they couldn't get an appointment with the spokesman to talk to them. And they wouldn't open the door and they wouldn't talk. This is quite a number of years ago. It might be a little different now. Actually, our friend, one of our junket friends, Jorge Camora, was the president at one point of the Hollywood Foreign Press Association, if you remember Jorge.
Yes.
But
he has whore in his name. I'll remind you that you just called them all whores.
Well, not Jorge.
So if Jorge is listening.
I like Jorge.
I want to apologize for Neil.
I'm just saying that.
But you're a whore, according
to
Neil.
I've told this story before years ago on the podcast, and I'm going to tell it again. Okay, and this is the story, and it's a very
I'm
going
to go to the
story.
Bathroom,
and I have to. We can't assume that everybody's listened to every minute of this podcast over the last.
No, don't worry.
No, I'm sitting here and
years.
I haven't heard them all.
So here's the story. Okay, so once upon a time there were four award shows. There was the Oscars for movies. There was the Tonys for Broadway. There was the Emmys for television, and there were the Grammys for music, and that was it in terms of award show. Yes, there was like the National Board of Review and stuff, but you know, they just had a little ceremony or whatever. And such was the case with the Golden Globes. They did not have a televised ceremony. They just kind of like gave awards out and they called
He's
up the winners.
Digressing his digression.
Now, Dick Clark, who was a brilliant
wake me when this is over,
who was a brilliant programmer, said, you know, look at the ratings on these four award shows. We should do another award show. We could make a lot of money and get a lot of ratings. So he looked around and he found this organization, the Golden Globes, that gave awards to both television and movies. And he put it on TNT back in the day before the internet when there were only a few.
On like a Saturday afternoon, I think. It was like a weird.
And unshockingly to Dick Clark, but shockingly to most of the network executives, this thing on this unseen TNT back in the day was not a really heavily watched station.
I think it was TBS actually, but
yes, it was TBS. I'm sorry. What did I say? TNT.
TNT.
Sorry, it was TBS. WTBS out of Atlanta. this thing got amazing ratings. So they finished up their contract with TBS, which was like a 3 or 4 year contract. And then NBC hopped on the train and said, okay, when this contract runs out, we're buying this thing from you for like a fortune. And they signed like a 20-year deal or something like that. And they promoted the shit out of the Golden Globes. And they built the Golden Globes. Not the organization and the voting body didn't really change, but they built up the because they were the first non out of those four that I mentioned, the first award show that was out of those four that I mentioned, Tony, Grammy, the EGOTs, you know, and they became very prestigious. The voting body is still the same. You can buy a Golden Globe. Those voters do get flown all over the world, and you know,
because of Dick Clark, because of NBC.
Yes,
yeah. Right. No, I'm explaining to people that it makes a ton of money every year, and there
and
are
the
only 90
like going
members.
To the show. It's more relaxed. Everybody's a winner.
So they get to
they
go
have
on,
an open bar.
They get to set visits. Yeah,
they have
it's
two
a more fun.
Best picture comedy. Best picture, drama, musical. So everybody's a
but
winner.
What they also do that we were alluding to a moment ago when we said J-Lo will absolutely get a Golden Globe is they intentionally nominate big stars like Brad Pitt and
Jennifer
Angelina
Aniston.
Jolie. Angelina Jolie for the, what was that called? The Traveler? The thing in Venice with, yeah. With
oh,
Johnny Depp?
The Tourist.
The Tourist that was horrible.
Yeah.
But when you nominate those people and they show up, you get ratings.
Yeah, well, listen.
So that's their biggest crime. Look, they got Ricky Gervais coming back this year, so that's
oh, good. Well, you know, look, I'll say, look, whether they can be bought, I don't. I said that I don't really know that that's true. They do. I know a lot of them do.
Unquestionably, there was a time when it was true.
Well, you know, whether or not being flown all over the world and getting all these gifts
influences
will make you vote for these people. I mean,
nah.
I don't know. I mean, I can't speak for the voter that's actually checking the box. I mean, my wife said to me the other day, because we are all in the Critics, by the way, it's no longer called the BFCA organization. It's called the Critics' Choice. They've changed the official name since it's the Critics' Choice Awards. But, you know, we get all this stuff that comes in. We just got this huge book on The Irishman. It's a coffee table book. And the book must have cost like I don't know. They put it into production and sending it out to all the voting organizations. It must have cost them a fortune. And my wife goes, do they really think by sending you this book that you don't need and that you don't want, which is true, is going to make you want to vote for that film? I go, of course not. I go with like, I don't want the book, but they've spent a fortune making this like this gloss, heavy paper stock, beautiful book. And I'm going to go, oh, look at the book. I guess I want to vote for The Irishman now. I mean, my vote, whether it will be for The Irishman or not, is totally not based on whether I'm getting this crap. So I can't really speak to the voter, the single voter on the Golden Globes, whether they're being bought. But I just know that the studios spend a lot of money to
promote
these people, their films and actors and actresses to the Golden Globe. And I know that the Golden Globe people happily, a lot of them happily accept these.
They don't have to work under the same rules as the Motion Picture Association or the Oscar voters, which are not allowed to accept certain gifts over a certain value of money. Can't be wined and dined. They used to be able to, but they far less frequently can be. They're not allowed to sit down at a meal that has waiter service. So there's all kinds of crazy rules now. The
really, it's going to be a buffet.
The place you have the dinner has to be something like 150 yards from the screening room, so you can't take them from a bad screening room to an expensive restaurant.
Well, right now, being with the BFCA Critics' Choice, we're constantly over the last few weeks being bombarded with invitations to attend receptions for all these movies, because the road to the Oscars begins with the smaller groups. You know, nobody thought that I'm just coming up with something. The Song of Names, nobody even considered that. Or years ago, what was that Bollywood movie? Slumdog Millionaire, that came out of nowhere.
Right.
But all of a sudden, it got National Board of Review, LA Critics, New York. And all of a sudden, so if you get some notice on that, then the Academy starts to take notice and goes, I'm going to.
Yeah, you're going to.
Hi, I'm in the middle of the podcast. What's up?
Who is that?
Yes. Can you wait
Neil
10 minutes?
Neil got a phone call. It must be super important.
Wait 10 minutes.
Does somebody need
a
kidney?
I was telling them not to come upstairs while we're doing the podcast.
Is a cancer victim that needs an organ?
What I'm saying is that...
Yes, tell us what you're saying.
We're being courted to recognize films that might not ordinarily be recognized, and films that you would expect to be recognized. So we nominate them, and then it's all feeding into the Globes, and then the Oscars, I think. And the
we're
Oscars
whores are, too.
That's the
important point.
Well, I don't know. Are you influenced by getting a coffee table book on Marriage Story?
I have a friend who's a voter in
Frozen
the,
Two.
I have a friend who's a voter in the cell. Academy who's very insulted by the idea that a sit down dinner with waiter service would be more influential to him than past hors d'oeuvres, right. And he's like, I don't go to 21. Because I want to meet the stars necessarily.
I go for the hamburger.
I go because I can talk to my colleagues in the same room about what they like. We can spitball back and forth. And so he's I want to keep him anonymous.
No, tell me who he is.
I write about him.
We're not on mic now. But
I write about him every year for a couple of publications, and he's my anonymous voter, or one of three. So
I know who it is. I know who it is.
Well, no, I don't think you do.
I think I do. I'll tell you later.
It doesn't matter.
All right, anyway, it doesn't matter. But yeah, so we'll see how this Oscar race. You know, there's no standout picture this year where everybody's just like embracing the shit out of the picture. Where they're like, oh, it's going to Titanic. Oh, it's going to Forrest Gump. You know,
not yet.
I mean, you know, it's.
We haven't seen them all.
Well, you know, they just started showing 1917. Wilson Morales saw it and said.
Roger Friedman loved it too. Yeah, a lot of people said it's
pretty good.
We're going tonight.
Pretty good.
If
you
I
know?
Can ever get out of this podcast,
we can get out of the podcast. What's opening next week?
Not a whole lot. You want to know next week?
You want to talk about the balloons?
I'm going to say in 10 seconds that you had been talking about Modern Love on Amazon Prime.
Did you finish it?
I caught a couple of those. I haven't seen them all, but I do recommend it. It's hit and miss, but they're short and sweet, and a lot of famous people in them. And
a lot of famous people.
So I'm reluctantly agreeing with Neil.
Again, if you watch it, you got to watch.
You got to watch much.
You got to watch the last episode last.
Right,
you can watch
down.
Them out of order.
What's next week?
Kind Hearts and Coronets.
Oh, my goodness.
Something called
Almost
Home.
Are you looking at it from 1966?
Yes, I was
that's
what
it looks like, right? That's it.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking, you know?
And that ain't much, but coming on December 6th, there'll be more. We've got...
Yeah, there's tons of stuff coming.
Yeah, Aeronauts. And then on the 13th, All Hell Breaks Loose. We've got Jumanji, Richard Jewell, Bombshell, Uncut Gems, A Hidden Life, Seberg.
Uncut Gems is great. Seberg looks overrated. And
Uncut Gems, we'll talk about it. It is great. I loved it. Did you see it yet, Pagrelli?
Yeah.
What do you think?
I needed medication afterwards.
I hear Richard Jewell is good. And that guy, Paul.
I love Clint Eastwood movies. I really do. Yeah. The Mule, I don't understand why they didn't get behind that last year for a push for awards, because I really loved The Mule. I thought it was a lot of...
Have you ever gotten behind a mule? It's not pleasant.
No. All right, anyway, Bill McCuddy.
We watch the bad movies so you don't have to.
Neil Rosen, thanks for sitting around talking movies with us.
We'll do it again next week.
And reach me at Neil Rosen Apples. Reach Bill Begoli at Instagram at Bill Begoli.
And keep tweeting me as you have been, and I appreciate it, at Bill McCuddy.
At Bill McCuddy. And as I started to say, and Bill finished my sentence, thanks for sitting around talking movies with us. We'll sit around talk movies again with you next week.